Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score, a Radio.com sports station.
Happy 5th of July. Hope the weekend has been fantastic. Yeah, solo Grody show until 3 o'clock this afternoon. And I know there were no group gathering fireworks shows yesterday, or at least nothing official, nothing that towns were allowed to do, right? I think that's the case. But there were fireworks yesterday. There have been fireworks for a long time. I actually witnessed an unbelievable show somewhat accidentally. I did go to a small gathering of friends in Elmhurst last night, like six people. Well distanced, we played horse, that's how distanced we were. So I left Elmhurst, coming back to the city about 10 o'clock last night. So, and I take 290 East, which is the logical way to go, because the highway is right there, at least where I was in Elmhurst on 290 East, heading back to Chicago, and it was pretty amazing, like brilliant fireworks shows, seemingly every quarter mile, really accounting for every town between Elmhurst and the great, big, beautiful city of Chicago as I made my way back on 290 East. So I'd never actually seen anything like that, because I'm usually in one place for 4th of July, whether it is here on the radio talking to you or maybe in the city watching the fireworks from a rooftop. But it was pretty interesting. I'm like, yeah, every town pretty much has something going. These aren't just, you know, Joe and Bob in their backyard blowing off M80s and Roman candles. These were like the brilliant fireworks. So it was, I don't know if that was supposed to be going on, but it was nice and it was lovely. And then this was an evil pleasure of mine. I don't feel good about what I'm about to say, but there was like an 8 mile delay going westbound on 290 last night, just a forever backup. And I always feel this guilty sense of pleasure when I'm going in the right direction, and I'm like, ha, thank God that's not me, because I've been there. But I don't feel particularly good about the way I felt about that, but it absolutely happened. I am evil. I enjoyed my 4th of July. I hope that you did as well. Today on the show, we will talk to, as you heard Spiegel say, we'll keep the baseball talk rocking a little bit later on with Sun-Times Cubs beat reporter Russell Dorsey. He is new on the beat. He is young. He's got fresh ideas. I can't wait to talk to Russell. I've talked to him before. Seems like a great dude, and he sounds like he knows what he's talking about, which is great for our purposes here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We'll get a full blast of Bears with Arthur of the Arkishes of Shaw Media's Bear Insider. He is the editor there. So we'll talk to Arthur about whatever we want to talk about as it pertains to the Bears. I have a Bulls management comp for you later that I would like to share, and some cuts from Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago to add some texture to that as well. A Comiskey Park item, two Comiskey Park items, some pretty cool anniversaries of games that took place at Comiskey Park, which we'll get into a little bit later on. If you haven't heard, by the way, speaking of the White Sox of 2020, a couple of White Sox players have tested positive for COVID-19. They have chosen, those individual players have chosen to keep their names private as you are allowed to do, and I totally and completely respect that. It is up to the individual player. I know Freddie Freeman, for example, the Atlanta Braves, wanted to make it public, and it's possible that these two White Sox players will want to make it public as well, but that is completely their prerogative. But we do know that two Sox players have tested positive. I've not heard anything about the Cubs players testing positive. You know about Tommy Hotovy and his story, and as he continues to hopefully get healthy for his sake and for the sake of his family as well. So again, I'm here until 3 o'clock. I'm Mark Grody. I'm interactive as always for you. I am opening the text line as we speak. You can get on that at 312-644-6767. Text me anytime. Chances are I will share it with the rest of the world. So make it good. I'm on Twitter at Mark Grody Sports. We can play on Instagram and Facebook. I do it all. So come on in, play, follow, whatever. We shall interact between now and 3 o'clock today. The NFL plans to consider the NFL Players Association's recommendation to cancel the preseason entirely, though it prefers to cut the schedule in half. As you know, and this is, none of this has happened officially. We're going to use words like allegedly and reportedly and in theory and sources for now, but these are all things that are pretty sure. As of now, the league reportedly has decided that it is going to be two preseason games where they cut off games 1 and 4, giving you more time on the front to get ready for a preseason game and more time on the back. But the union's board of player representatives voted Thursday to ask the league to cancel the entire schedule. If you hadn't heard that slipped in there. And according to the collective bargaining agreement, the NFL can impose up to 4 preseason games per team this season and up to 3 when the regular season goes to 17 in 2021. Remember, these are like reminders of things that we were talking about before COVID-19, when we were like, oh my God, 17. We were gluttonous before COVID-19. Now we're like, can we possibly even get 16 games in? I do not think there are going to be preseason games this year. I don't know that for a fact. It just feels like this would be a chance not worth taking. It is worth taking the chance to play the 16 regular season games. Some of you will agree with that. Some of you will not. I think it is. But something must take the hit. And the preseason, as I learned in my high school economics class, it is opportunity cost. That the preseason would be the opportunity cost if you even consider that an opportunity. And many players and coaches don't, and many fans don't. So that I don't think that will exist. I do think there will be a season. The NFL charged through the combine, free agency, and the draft, and that was because, damn it, there is going to be a season, and we are not going to get behind in all of those particular things. I mean, that would have been very difficult logistically to get all of that done in short order. And I was actually talking about this at the barbecue I went to last night, and I was reminded that The combine was in February. I was there. We were all there. COVID was happening, but we didn't really, nobody took it seriously then. It wasn't our problem then. And I think that no matter where you align with everything, nobody thought that COVID was going to be a deal then. It was happening then, and I had to be reminded of it. But yeah, there will be an earnest attempt to play 16 games this year in the NFL. So with no off-season program, no preseason games, and likely a very different training camp, one with new rules, regulations, protocols, I can't wait to hear. I mean, I hope they lay it out for us, because I am just have a natural curiosity about how that will look, what they will be allowed to do, what they won't be allowed to do. I mean, I can't imagine there will be much hitting or contact, as if there is much hitting and contact in training camps around the NFL these days. Anyway, but the most important part of every NFL team now, with everything said, is not the quarterback. That's number two still. It is not the quarterback. It is the coach, or coaches, plural. I think that this actually suits the Bears very well. Matt Nagy, I think, may thrive under these circumstances for two reasons. Because this season will require, has already required, creativity. And that Matt Nagy has. He's still finding his way as a head coach, but the creativity exists with Matt Nagy in a lot of ways. And I know it has manifested itself, at least in 2018 with play calling. We didn't see much of the creativity last year because he just couldn't afford to do it. But just in general, he is a creative coach in terms of the way he comports himself in a locker room, in the hallways, with the dance parties, with everything that he does, how he had the guest calls on Zoom, just in general. There are lots of reasons to at least accept that Matt Nagy, he is a creative guy. Here's the other part that I know is going to resonate with a lot of Bears fans. This will also force Matt Nagy to simplify. He is going to have to simplify the offense, something he hasn't always wanted to do. Not necessarily something I've always wanted him to have done, because I'd have liked to have seen the full Nagy offense. I know everybody would have. It hasn't really worked. But this offense needs even more simplification than the second half of last season, where he did rip out major chunks of the playbook. So, yeah, I mean, the actual install process has been compromised. So you cannot put every little single play into that playbook, or you can't overcomplicate things. Let me not overcomplicate things. Getting tongue-tied here. The Bears coaches will have to simplify with things like more running of the football, run plays in succession, making a yard when you have to, a third and one play that works, that is not Cordarrelle Patterson coming into the game. More passes to the tight ends, more succinct in the red zone, fewer plays, more simplification. So that's what they're going to have to do. And Nagy, I think, already had it in his mind. I mean, going back to the combine, that he knew that he had to do things differently this year in order to suit the talent that he has on his field. Now, if there was any doubt about it at all, what this offseason has done has to have forced him to think a totally and completely different way, not just with the guys that have been here before, because, yeah, there's a lot of guys that get this offense, understand what they're doing, but there are going to be guys that are going to be plugged in this year and expected to compete and expected to thrive that have not been part of this offense, and it's going to need to be more simplified. Doesn't have to be simple, just simplified. And Nagy also now has a staff of coaches who talk like him, that are in lockstep. Not that there were problems with any of the other coaches necessarily, but these guys really like talk like Nagy. John DeFilippo and Bill Lazor, Juan Castillo, and Clancy Barone, all of these guys, they are in lockstep with Nagy. So that's going to come in handy as well. The other part of this, too, is, and let's go to the quarterback position. The other part of this is whether it is two or zero preseason games. I think Mitchell Trubisky will be the starting quarterback, and that's not what I was saying before this preseason, or before the offseason started back at the combine. I was saying, well, Foles is here. It might be Foles' job. This is not enough time for Nick Foles to work with these receivers. Yes, Nick Foles is really smart. Yes, Nick Foles understands a version of this offense and probably can pick things up relatively quickly, but he doesn't know these guys. He doesn't know these receivers. He doesn't know the route tendencies of Anthony Miller. He doesn't know the exact capabilities of Allen Robinson. He doesn't know anything about Riley Ridley and Javon Wims and Ted Ginn. I don't think they've ever crossed paths, have they? Ginn and Foles? I don't think so. Darnell Mooney? Well, hell, Trubisky doesn't know the tendencies of Darnell Mooney. And that's a real thing. You know, that's a real thing and not something you can learn on the job in the first couple games of the year. Now, I don't know Nick Foles and what he's capable of. Maybe he's Superman and he can just know guys automatically. But I don't think that is realistic to think that you could just put Nick Foles in on whatever it is, September 13th at Detroit, and say, go, it's your team, it's your ball. You need to know exactly what it is Tariq Cohen is doing when he slips behind a linebacker and he goes deep. You know, I mean, you can't expect that. And at least Trubisky has that part. You know, he knows these guys. He has been working with these guys in the offseason. Nick Foles has not. Nick Foles has, and this is not ripping on Foles. Foles has been home with his family doing his individual workouts, but not that I know of with any of the Bears players. So there are a lot of things all of a sudden that are stacking up in Mitchell Trubisky's corner for him to be the starting quarterback for the Bears this year. However, if it looks like it did last year in short order, then you have to roll the dice and bring Nick Foles in, which could be the best possible scenario because he is one of the best backup quarterbacks in NFL history, really. And I'm not trying to be dramatic when I say that. The dude won a Super Bowl and was the MVP of it. That puts him in the running for greatest backup quarterback of all time. Not to mention the fact that he did get a team into the playoffs as well in 2018. And, oh, they beat the Bears at Soldier Field that day. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that works out for the Bears and if it will work in their favor as far as the offense is concerned. And then, and I've talked about this before, again, if it were down to zero preseason games and the training camp is dumbed down to nothing, where does that put the rookies, man? Because that's the part that is fun to watch in training camp. It is the best part of training camp, watching guys develop and what rookies might make an impact. It's hard enough for rookies to make an impact when it's a full offseason program and a full training camp and a full four games, because that's what it's for. You know, preseason is for guys to make the team and for guys to show you what they have. Beyond Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson, and even those two guys are going to have, as smart as both of those guys are, and they are smart, it's going to be really difficult for those guys to come in and be expected to make fast impacts. And then I have no idea where that leaves Travis Gibson and Kendall Vildor and Darnell Mooney, because there is, you know, growing fanfare for the 4-2, 4-3 speedy receiver out of Tulane, Darnell Mooney, to come in and maybe make an impact. I don't think that's going to be possible. Arlington Hambright, Lechavius Pig Simmons, the two seventh-round offensive linemen. How can you possibly even dress those guys? I mean, it's too bad, and these are all things that have to be thought about, and it makes the coaching staff is going to have to make some really fast and hard decisions with their own personal bias to it, because it's not going to all play out on the field. How can you, with this offseason, just throw Jalen Johnson in there as your cornerback on the other side of Kyle Fuller, other than the fact that you have a really strong front seven and a terrific defense? That is the scenario. That is the pathway for Jalen Johnson. But I keep saying I think it very well could be Kevin Tolliver that ends up being the starter, at least early on. But you have a terrific room of cornerbacks all of a sudden, at least depth-wise. I don't know if it's like a terrific room, but there is real depth with old Artie Burns and Jalen Johnson and Kevin Tolliver, like I said, and Kyle Fuller, the all-pro coming back, Trey Roberson, the kid out of ISU, and then ultimately played in Canada. So you, Stephen Denmark, we'll see if the converted receiver to cornerback and who sat out last year injured, we'll see if Stephen Denmark can jump up and take the next step. But that's obviously unrealistic. So it's going to be interesting. It's good, like, defensively, for the most part, other than that cornerback position, I think the Bears are set up in a really good place just because they are so veteran-laden and those guys know what they're doing, so they're kind of on automatic. I mean, they do have to take the next step to getting back to elite, and I think that falls in the corner of Chuck Pagano. Chuck Pagano was good in his first year with the Bears, but I think that there's another step that he has to take, putting Eddie Jackson back in the right place as far as roaming and playing center field and being more standard free safety, getting Roquan Smith back to where he was, getting Khalil Mack back to where he was, having Akeem Hicks back in play. get just designing plays to get Robert Quinn to the quarterback. They don't need to mess around. Of course, we want to hear that Robert Quinn is a diverse player who can stop the run and he can drop back in coverage. But no. We really just want you to be somebody who gets to the quarterback, or at least who hurries or knocks down the quarterback, who gives the appearance that this man, Robert Quinn, will knock the quarterback down. Because if you have that, then Khalil Mack will knock the quarterback down and have 16 to 17 sacks this year. So, and I am not worried about Khalil Mack. 8.5 sacks last year, whatevs. He will adjust. He seems angry from everybody that has spoken on the Zoom calls. So, yeah, I am not particularly worried about the defense, nor the stars and the playmakers. Just a couple of positions that are going to need tightening up and working through, and some positions to be won. Even at that safety spot, yeah, I'm pretty much everybody. I'm pretty much groupthink on Tashawn Gibson as the other safety, the strong safety for the Bears this year. But I mean, I don't rule out Deion Bush. I still think Deion Bush would be a better fit, but he may not be a better player. It's just going to have to be, and that is incumbent upon Chuck Pagano to say, hey, Tashawn, I know you like to roam and play free as well, but we're going to need you to hang around up a little bit closer to the line here. We're just going to need you to go ahead and do that, because I need Eddie getting back to 6 interceptions and maybe a couple pick sixes like he had in 2018. So a lot of coaching to be done this year. Still waiting word on when training camp is official and what it will look like. We think it's going to be on July 28th. The coaches will probably start trickling in earnest officially to Hallis Hall on about July 20th. And then we can talk and we could all set out a further plan. But yeah, there's a lot of interesting things cooking. 312-644-6767 is the number on which to text, or you can call. Whoa, sounds like it's windy in here all of a sudden. You could call. We are officially bundled here with both of our phone lines, the text line and the phone line as well. There will be more Bears talk today throughout the show, and specifically at 2:00, we will talk to Arthur Arkish. I'll run my theory past him and see what he's got cooking up for the Bears this year. See what he thinks about the quarterback situation. See what he thinks about the offense and Matt Nagy this year as well. Russell Dorsey will come our way at 1:00 of the Sun Times to talk about the Chicago Cubs. I understand that both the Cubs and the White Sox right now are in the midst of Zoom calls where they have individual players speaking to the media. If we can get that turned around, we'll have some of that audio for you later on from both of our ball clubs. We're kind of at the mercy of teams when it comes to the Zoom call, so it's not clear if we'll be able to turn that around to you. But when we return, I definitely will have some tape that I have prepared for you as it pertains to the Chicago White Sox. You know all of the interesting names that you're going to get to see this year, but there could be even more intriguing names. I don't know if more interesting, but definitely intriguing names that you might get to see play this year as well. So we are going to talk about that next. Cubs at 1, White Sox talk is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What's up? Mark Grody with you. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's another scorcher in Chicago. I was already outside earlier today for about an hour or so. It's about my limit because, yeah, humidity is real unless you're in water in Chicago. So, hey, be careful. I'm here till 3, and our number is 312-644-6767. Textable right there. Going to get into some White Sox talk here, but let me take you back in history, if I may, for a moment or two. 87 years ago tomorrow, Monday, the first ever All-Star game was held at Comiskey Park. Not Comiskey 2, not U.S. Cellular Field, not Guaranteed Rate. At Comiskey Park, July 6, 1933, the American League beat the National League 4-2 in 2 hours and 5 minutes. 47,595 at Comiskey Park. Yes, Babe Ruth hit a home run. Guys like Lefty O'Doul, Woody English, and Pie Trainer played in that game. When I did Cubs, when I did the Cubs pre and post from 2015 to 2017, our engineer, Dave Miska, always had a theory that guys from the 1930s and or even prior to that were just made up names. Like they didn't really exist. Old Screwball Simmons now steps up to the plate for another chance at a home run. Here's Hitman Curveball Jones. I just thought that that was the most perfect theory by Miska. Lou Gehrig played on that particular day as well. That was the first ever All-Star game, again, going down at Comiskey. Also, you had 50 years later. So I'm trying to do math in my head. I apologize for that. 50 years later, and this is not that difficult, Mark. 50 years later, the All-Star game came back to Comiskey Park, and they made sure to do it exactly 50 years later, and that was in 1983. That will be 37 years ago tomorrow. And that is when, in 1983, at Comiskey Park, you old-timers will remember this. That is when Fred Lynn hit a grand slam, the first ever grand slam in an All-Star game. So there is also, because yeah, we're at that point in the baseball season where we would be talking about the All-Star break and then the dog days of summer. So we have bypassed all of that. There is no All-Star game this year, as if you needed that formalized. But formally, there will be no All-Star game this year. Going through some of those rosters, I couldn't do the 1933 All-Star game because there's just too many unfamiliar names and names that were made up. But here's some of the names. I love doing this. The 1983 All-Star game rosters. National League, Gary Carter. Now, that's when he was with Montreal before he became a dreaded Met. But yeah, Gary Carter of the Montreal Expos, great catcher. Andre Dam Dawson, again, when he was with the Montreal Expos, when he just used to crush the, he used to wear out Wrigley Field when he was with the Montreal Expos. That was the number one reason why young Mark Rohde was thrilled when he came to the Cubs. Not just because he had a great ball player, but because he would stop hitting damn home runs for Montreal against the Cubs. Let me just fire through some of these. Darrell Evans, Glenn Hubbard, Terry Kennedy, Pedro Guerrero, yeah! George Hendrick, Bill Madlock should have never been traded from the Cubs. That was a joke. Bill Madlock, a terrific third baseman, then with Pittsburgh, eventually with the Cubs. Or was it Pittsburgh after the Cubs? I don't remember. Mike Schmidt, another guy who wore out the Cubs in Wrigley Field. Ozzie Smith, who I had on the air on Hit and Run last Sunday when I was filling in for Matt Spiegel. Ol Oliver of Montreal. Dale Dam Murphy of the National League. Johnny Bench Bruce Benedict, Dickie Thon. Oh, Dickie Thon, you got hit in the eye. Who else here? Jesse Orozco. Leon Durham of the Cubs was there. Lee Smith of the Cubs. I'm just kind of skipping through a few of these. Steve Sachs, can you throw from second base? Willie McGee from St. Louis. Hated him. And old Bill Dawley from Houston. Guilty. I don't remember him. I'll go through the American League roster here in just a little bit from 1983. But one of the... Thank you. One of the more intriguing parts of this baseball season is that the taxi squads are available to teams. And I do like the way we talk about taxi squads as if they've been around forever. Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's going to be on the taxi squad. Yeah, the taxi squad. Essentially the reserves, because there's no minor league baseball 60-man roster. So in the White Sox case, there are already so many young and intriguing prospects on the big league team. You know this. We've talked about them. Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, Michael Kopech, and hopefully Michael Kopech can recover from the personal issues that he is dealing with. Even Yoan Moncada, even though I think, you know, he's beyond prospect, but he's still one of those young developing players who some people think will be in the MVP conversation. It could get even more interesting for the White Sox than just that particular group. One of the more plugged in and insightful guys on the White Sox beat is Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine podcast, and I had a chance to talk to him the other day. I asked him about a certain guy and did not necessarily expect to get the answer I did. I asked him about this year's number one draft pick for the White Sox, the lefty hurler, do you say hurler, Garrett Crochet, and if he thinks Crochet will see the big league diamond this season.
You know, he needs to throw because he didn't pitch much for the University of Tennessee. He only had one appearance, which was a little more than three innings. He pitched three and a third innings against Wright State. I'm going to go ahead and say yes, because I expect the White Sox to be in contention. And at some point, if Jace Fry does not pick up his game, and he's not that reliable left-handed arm out of the bullpen to be paired with Aaron Bummer, Mark, Rick Hahn's going to need that. And I'll be quite frank, I can't believe that there's a trade deadline for this season, but there is one for August 31st. I wonder how iffy GMs are going to be trying to acquire another player from another team when you are not 100% sure they're following the medical procedures that Major League Baseball has laid out. So Rick Hahn needs to make a late season addition for the bullpen. He's got a fantastic arm in Garrett Crochet. Don Cooper has been through this drill already, having a college supreme left-hander get ready in their first year in Chris Sale. So they know the drill, and it's just a matter of how quickly can they get Garrett Crochet ramped up to help. I don't expect a lot of appearances. Maybe he'll appear in three games, Mark. But if it's a yes or no question, I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I could see Garrett Crochet join the White Sox late this season.
I love that answer. I didn't necessarily expect to hear that answer. That was, again, Josh Nelson from Sox Machine just a couple of days ago. Crochet, if you needed a refresher, 21 years old, drafted number 11 overall by the White Sox this year, just about a month ago. Wasn't not even that long ago. Out of Tennessee, college kid. Yes, only played in one game this year in college due to COVID-19. His junior year, the statistics that popped off the page to me, 65 innings, 81 strikeouts, 22 walks. So yes, it is okay to compare him to Chris Sale. Sale, similar build, a little more slight. Like, well, Sale is more slight than everybody. Lefty, tall, all that powerful pitches, all that stuff. Sale was the 13th overall pick in 2010, and yes, he did play in the bigs the same year as he was drafted, just like maybe we will see Crochet do. Sale that year was brought up in August. They weren't messing around. They didn't start him, but he was high leverage bullpen right away. Go get him, kid. And that was 2010 for the Sox, and I meant to look this up. And maybe, Sean, when you get a chance, you could do this. I can't remember if Well, the Sox must have been contending it at that time. If I remember correctly, in 2010, the Sox, there was at least a really great stretch of that season where it gave them a glimmer of hope. And then 2011 was the year where they were in first place all year, and then it slid at the end under Robin Ventura. But there had to have been a reason in 2010 that they thought, let's bring up Chris Sale, the stud, and see if we can get into the postseason in 2010, which I know they didn't, but they had reason for hope at least in 2010. So I love the idea. I really do. So this is one of the exciting parts of a 60-game schedule. With all the negatives that exist, I think that would be fascinating if Sox fans got to see Garrett Crochet this year in some capacity. And you may just need him. I mean, not just as a novelty. It's not that we can do this. It's you might need him. You don't know right now. You still just don't know on the Sox staff. What you know about is Lucas Giolito and Dallas Keuchel. What you don't know about is Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez, Gio Gonzalez, and Michael Kopech. You just don't. I mean, you can make some guesses on those guys, but there really isn't really sure thing beyond Giolito and Keuchel. You might need Garrett Crochet this year, especially if you feel like you're going to compete. And who knows? Like, it could be in a starting capacity, 2-3 innings. Who knows? I mean, everything's in play this year. You could add him to a lefty combination with Aaron Bummer. You know, you put him in there with other high-leverage guys like Alex Colome, Steve Cishek, and the rest of the crew out of that White Sox pen. So it just becomes really an intriguing thought process for maybe seeing Crochet. The next guy that I wanted to know about was Andrew Vaughn, the powerful first baseman. He was selected third overall for the White Sox last year. Will he see the big league roster this year, Mr. Sox Machine?
I'm going to say no, but if he does, there's been some bad news. Andrew Vaughn plays this year, Mark, if Jose Abreu gets hurt, if Edwin Encarnacion gets hurt, and if Zach Collins does not hit. If two of those three situations happens, then we'll see Andrew Vaughn. And it will be exciting because Andrew Vaughn's a very good hitter and we have another young player to get hyped about on the White Sox side. But it would come with bad news in the sense of that the White Sox are really leaning on Jose Abreu and Edwin Encarnacion in 2020 to be those veteran bats, to be built around Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, and Luis Robert and Tim Anderson to try to solidify this lineup. So I'm going to say no, because knock on wood, the White Sox avoid injuries. And we'll see Andrew Vaughn sometime in 2021.
All right. Yeah, I get your answer, John. But I want to see Andrew Vaughn up this year. Yeah, we will see. I mean, Edwin Encarnacion get a little long in the tooth. Edwin Encarnacion could still hit 40 bombs, well, not in a 60-game season, but you know what I mean, proportionally speaking. What is 40 bombs? Is that like 17 this year? So, yeah, I mean, he's right. It would portend bad things if he was to be here, but why not? Get him in, let him pinch hit a couple times. Throw him in as a DH. You know, let it go. See what you can do. And by the way, Sean did check this. Sean Anderson producing the show today and running all over the place. Thank you, Sean. You're a good man. Sean came up with kind of confirmed what I thought about the White Sox. My memory is better than what I had thought. The Sox in 2010, 88-74, and they were in first place on August 11th. So that makes all the sense in the world why the Sox went to their top prospect in the organization in 2010 to give him a role, and the rest is history. Eventually he got out of his bullpen gig and became a great starter for the Chicago White Sox. All right,
and
so
Mark,
he doesn't think yes.
Real quick, hate to steamroll you, but that year
no.
in 2010 by Chris Sale, if Garrett Crochet has a year like that, I think White Sox fans should be very excited. 21 games, 23 innings, a 1.93 ERA, a 1.07 WHIP, and he struck out 12 batters per 9 innings. That's pretty damn good.
Wow. wow. And that's why he was like, get me the hell out of the bullpen after this year. I don't care how crazy my delivery looks. Get me out of here. Yeah, that would be terrific. But yeah, and I know that people get irritated when we do these comps, and it is like the easy pickings for a comp. But I do think in this case, it's okay to comp him to Chris Sale, just because the makeup and the build is very similar. All right, next guy, last guy that I was curious about for the White Sox, because I know you are White Sox fans. Everybody loves Nick Madrigal. Man, Nick's getting old now. Nick, 2018 pick for the White Sox, number 4 overall. Josh Nelson, will Nick Madrigal be on the Sox real roster this year?
Yes, we will see Nick Madrigal. And there is no topic that I enjoy more than talking about service time manipulation.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if we're going to see Nick Madrigal for the first week, Mark.
Okay.
I could see the White Sox holding Madrigal back and carrying more pitchers to get through the first 2 weeks of the season while Madrigal gets more reps for the taxi squad. In March, when it was spring training 1.0, Nick Madrigal wasn't performing all that well. He wasn't setting himself apart from Lourie Garcia and Danny Mendick for the second base starting job for the White Sox. Now, obviously, everything has changed, and here we are in July, and there's still that competition, but there's no games. I mean, they have inter-squad scrimmages, so I don't know how Rick Hahn is going to make that decision. I don't know if he's going to lean heavily on Rick Renteria to help him make that decision on who the White Sox starting second baseman is, because going back to Rick Hahn's fan side of him, I'm sure he's tired of being the GM with 7 straight losing seasons. If you want to win, you need to get out of the gate quickly. And then the question is, who of these 3 players gives us the best chance to win right away in 2020? If that answer is Lourie Garcia, then Nick Madrigal going to be on the taxi squad for a couple of weeks. But Lourie Garcia has gotten hurt. And if Garcia pulls a hammy, then I would prefer Nick Madrigal over Danny Mendick to be that second baseman for the rest of the season for the White Sox. So I do think we'll see Nick Madrigal. I don't think he's going to play all 60 games, and probably around 40 games this year. And the White Sox will work it out that they gain an extra year of his service time.
Fair enough. So that's Josh Nelson, Sox machine on Nick Madrigal. Yeah, no, Lurie's fine. So, yeah, so there might be more than is already there for the Sox, and there's so much from which to pick to zero in on this year if you are a White Sox fan or a baseball fan. I mean, it's just a really interesting roster. I'm a little worried about Luis Robert, and this is nothing necessarily logical. I am only worried because it's like the time has come. We have heard so much about Luis Robert, how he is like the greatest White Sox prospect in the last 10, like better than, as much hype as there was over Eloy Jimenez. And there was a lot of hype about Eloy Jimenez on the immediate impact that he would make. And he didn't make an immediate impact, but Eloy ended up having a good year. Robert is like, he's gone beyond that in terms of what people are expecting from him. He got his extension. You know, there's no question about any of that, and now it's a mess. There's nothing that I have seen or heard to make one think that he's not going to be good. I just, like, all of a sudden that pressure is there, and maybe this comes from years of watching Cubs prospects prior to 2015 that were hyped like Robert was, the Corey Pattersons, Felix Pias, Gary Scotts, Kevin Ories, Bobby Hills, my God, the can't-miss guys. Maybe there's still a little bit of trauma from that. So, man, I mean, everything I've seen and heard, I think Luis Robert's the real deal, but now he, like, what if he goes 0-for-5 the first game, you know, and he makes an error in center field? Like, I just, that's the stuff that concerns me. But on the overall, I should not, logically, I probably should not be too worried. From the text line, and you can jump in at 312-644-6767. From the 864, hell of a job, per usual, Sean. Thanks, Sean. From the 309, don't cut me off.
Peoria, Matt. Thanks, Matt. That gets us going. Hopefully we could hear that later. Somebody texting about the Redskins and Coach Ron Rivera says the name change for 2020 season would be awesome. Yeah, I think everybody says that. I think that that is great. I think it's wonderful that all of these teams are having discussions, but especially in the Redskins case, I'm just not going to do a lot on it because I just don't think there's another side. I feel like this is like pure preaching to the choir. It is exactly a racist name. It is not good. You must get rid of it. That's all there is to talk about. There is no other side to this. From the 708, he is batting eighth or ninth. Where is the pressure? Well, you know, hopefully that's the case. I mean, that would be a smart move by Rick Hahn and Ricky Renteria to keep Luis Robert batting eighth or ninth. I'm just saying there's always a lot of pressure on guys for whom the expectations are sky high, and the expectations are not at an eight for Luis Robert. They are at a 10. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, top of the hour, we'll talk Cubs with the new Sun-Times Cubs reporter, Russell Dorsey, Arthur Arkish at 2. When we come back, I'll give you a few more names from that 83 All-Star roster on the American League side. And your text messages at 312-644-6767. It's Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mark Grody with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You are well. Here until 3 o'clock with you on The Score. And if you want to interact, 312-644-6767. Zoom calls going on as we speak, including White Sox manager Ricky Renteria. Jose Abreu of the White Sox is or has spoken. David Ross, actually, right now as we speak, he's zooming with the media, so we might have some of that turned around for you by the time this show ends. But again, we're kind of at the mercy of the teams as to when that is sent in to us and when we can get it turned around. But at some point in time, you will hear from all of those guys today or throughout the rest of this week here on The Score like we do. I talked about a couple of different White Sox anniversaries that were going on, or not Sox anniversaries, but Comiskey Park anniversaries that... The anniversary of the 1983 All-Star Game, which was held at Comiskey Park 50 years ago, will have been 50 years ago, or make that 37 years ago tomorrow. And we went through the names on the National League roster. Let's go through some of the names on the 1983 American League roster played at Comiskey Park. And some of those names include guys like the great George Brett, the great Rod Carew, then with the California Angels, Cecil Cooper, badass player for Milwaukee, Doug DeSensei of California, Reggie Dam Jackson of California, Fred Lynn of the Grand Slam with California, and for all you youngsters out there, that was the California Angels, then the Anaheim Angels, now the Los Angeles Angels. So there's the buildup. Lance Parrish of the Detroit Tigers. Jim Rice, another badass for Boston. Ted Simmons, Milwaukee. Manny Trio, and I got to be honest with you, Manny Trio, from when I was just a Ute, I loved Manny Trio when he played second base for the Cubs. I had forgotten, don't even remember him ever having been a Cleveland Indians. He played with Cleveland, did Manny Trio. So I'm learning as we speak in real time. You just heard me learn. Lou Whitaker of the Detroit Tigers, Willie Wilson of the Royals. Dude could fly. That's when guys like that made the All-Star team because they could hit and bunt and steal bases. Dave Winfield of the Yankees, Yaz of Boston, Carl Yastrzemski, Robin Yount, Bob Boone, California. A lot of California Angels representing. Bob Boone, I said. Ben Ogilvy, another one of those terrific Milwaukee Brewers players from that 80s era where there was so many good players on the Milwaukee Brewers. Eddie Murray, one of the greatest switch hitters of all time, representing the Baltimore Orioles at that time. Ricky Henderson of the Oakland A's, one of the GOATs. Gary Ward of Minnesota. Rick Sutcliffe of the Cleveland Indians before he made his way to the Chicago Cubs for who was it? Joe Carter, Mel Hall. Love Mel Hall. Cal Ripken Jr., Boston, make that Baltimore, of course. Ron Guidry of the New York Yankees was an all-star in 1983. Aurelio Lopez of Detroit. Tippi Martinez of Baltimore. Dan Quisenberry of Kansas City. Bob Stanley of the Boston Red Sox as well. Dave Steeb, who was a terrific starter for a lot of years with Toronto. All right, who was it in 1983? All right, this one's for you, Sean. I know you're young and you never saw this guy play, but let me test your White Sox history. Who was the rookie that represented the White Sox that got a huge ovation at Comiskey Park in 1983?
Okay, I have a couple guesses. My first one, and I think this is the correct answer. He visited my alum, my college, in 2018.
Your
Fanny Slap Friday, Ron Kittle.
Yes. Yes, the great Ron Kittle. Absolutely. He was a rookie that year. He hit home runs. That's what he did. He put them on the roof, even though the trajectory and the camera angles of every ball at Comiskey Park looked like they were going to hit the roof. But yeah, Kittle was absolutely the guy. And then to round out the rest of the American League roster in that year, it was one guy that I have never heard of, Matt Young from Seattle. Seattle was so foreign to me when I was a kid. Seattle's Matt Young, and then Texas's, and this is a guy I've heard of, Rick Honeycutt. So, yeah, those are the rosters from 83. Again, 87 years ago, tomorrow, Monday, the first ever All-Star game was held at Comiskey Park. That was July 6, 1933. The Babe Ruth home run in that game. And then 50 years later, the All-Star game came back to Comiskey Park. 83 would be 37 years ago tomorrow, and the Fred Lynn Grand Slam. So there's your history lesson for today. And tomorrow, just take a moment to think about Ron Kittle and those All-Stars from that year. Quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the Cubs with the Sun-Times new Cubs reporter, Russell Dorsey. I'm Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.